Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Diving into some more grinding the mocks data. And so we're in April here. I'm recording this late March. This will be out right at the beginning of last day of March, early April here. It's going to be essentially a full court press on rookie stuff. So break down a little bit of how I'm going to do it. And I'm going to hit some grinding the mock stuff right now. I'm doing some deep data dive here over the next week or so on some running back stuff, really tracking some combine stuff, and really doing a deep data dive. When I say running backs, it's actually running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. We'll have some profile stuff coming out as well, but I'm basically going to full court press this essentially all the way through. So I might even double up with some pods. I'll have to sort of see what the pacing's like on the outside of rookie draft stuff, but it's probably going to be pretty much full go from now through like mid-May, I would say. Like, it's going to be rookies mostly all the time. And I'll have some other stuff here and there where it comes, but I would say 85-90% of it's going to be rookie stuff. And I might continue to do like my Sunday strategy thing. Maybe I'll do some trade stuff where it comes up and obviously hit some news here, but we've done a ton of focus on a lot of different things. I think we've done a good job zigging where everyone's zagging. Let's hit this hard right now and get prepped, and then we'll see where all these things end up. So, all right. So, and I will have some written stuff. Like, I've got some charts and stuff that I think, you know, from editions prior to the book, and just stuff I've left on the cutting room floor. I'll get out on the website too, so that way you have it. And ultimately what I'll end up doing is like a rookie board. If you're familiar with it, last year I sort of did this. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to do draft coverage in terms of draft night. I will say for certain that by the time that you wake up in the morning the day after the first and second day of the NFL draft, you will have a podcast in your feed. I will have one as well. I'm sure the third day, and then I'll track UDFAs as well. And maybe we do like a Q&A at some point too. I think we did that last year. And we'll sort of go from there. I'll have the rookie draft board updated. Some theories, we'll be tracking drafts, all that sort of stuff. So that's basically where we're at right now. So I wanted, as a sort of a threshold thing, let's look at some grinding the mock stuff. I'm going to do quarterbacks here. I'll do running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. I'll combine the quarterbacks and the tight ends for this one, and then do individual running backs and wide receiver ones later on. So looking at the grinding the mock stuff, So I am recording this post San Francisco trade, and I'm recording it, I think, before any of the data has really baked in, I guess would be the say. It would be the thing that I would say. So you're not getting a ton of movement, for example, on specific players. So when you look at, you know, this is grindingthemocks.com. When you're looking at some of that data in there, you're not really seeing a ton of movement up yet. But I do think that Mac Jones is going to be the big mover in all of this. And I'm not sure, you know, when you look at it, I'm just sort of looking at the chart. Again, I'd be cautious about drawing a super ton of the data off of just this little, it's a couple of days worth of data. But when you look at sort of from, I don't know, maybe like the first week of February through that 6-week span between maybe like the first week of February through like the third week of March, second week of March, maybe like 40 days or so, 35, 40 days, somewhere in there, you see a generally upward arc. Right? As you get more and more of these drafts, you're getting more and more, you're getting more and more dots, essentially, is how they depict it. As the data is going on, we're getting closer to the draft. There's more interest. That's very natural. That's something we'll continue to see. You know, so what might be the threshold now might be like 2 or 3x that by the time, on a per day basis, by the time we actually get to the draft. So I expect to see some movement, and by and large, we'll get more efficient. Right now, he's at 15. Mac Jones is at 15.9. And to give you an idea, like when I was looking at this stuff back in January initially, I wasn't grinding the mocks, but it was like some other websites had it tracked. Like he was basically a fringe first-round guy. So to give you an idea, he's moved up pretty significantly. And in the past, we'll call it like 3, maybe 4 or 5 days, something like that, it has taken a relatively sharp tick upwards. And so it has taken a tick towards going higher. So if you were to think of it as like a clock, you know, as we're going, you know, we're moving sort of to the right-hand direction on a timeline. And if you're sort of looking at a clock, right, the Daniel Jones, or excuse me, the Mac, Freudian slip, Mac Jones arc was going maybe at like, instead of like, if you're going 3 o'clock, that would be just, hey, they're heading basically straight horizontal. There's nothing going on. They're not really moving up and down. It's pretty neutral. You might have said like the last 6 weeks or so might have been 230. So yeah, you're tracking along. You're more going horizontal than going upwards, but you are going up. But it's 230, maybe like 2 o'clock, somewhere in that range on the clock. It right now is much closer to like a 130, right? So now it has sort of gone up at almost like a 45 degree angle in the past couple of days. Again, that's small sample, but I do think that is going to continue. So one of the things that I have consistently seen, I've been really getting into some of these bigger media podcasts in terms of listening to people that are kind of plugged in on this stuff. I don't do a ton of that throughout the year because I think a lot of it can be narrative stuff, but I think you can get a lot of specific information on players at this point. And I try not to kill myself with the rookie draft content because you can go absolutely insane, which is how the analytics of Dynasty got started in the first place, was because I has gone absolutely insane in the rookie draft process. And that's a lot of where the research, when I decided to start researching, you know, Dynasty specific in my whole process, like that's really where a lot of it was initially focused at, because I was going crazy and making mistakes. Now it's much more streamlined and processed. But this is one of the things that really got me, was sort of the confusion in this time of year. So this is why I haven't really made it like I get up in the morning and start listening to NFL draft podcasts, because it can make you go totally disoriented. So if you're having that, step away from the podcast. It's okay. We got you covered. But the benefit of sort of tuning in now is I think you're getting sharper information. You're getting more stuff where pro days are happening, and you know that stuff can be a little bit over talked about. But one of the things that was really interesting to me was from Daniel Jeremiah, and he said what people don't realize about pro days is, and this year in particular, is in with pro days, what you have is you get guys, scouts going down there. You might even get, you know, media people going down there. I said one of the things that he would do is he would go and not just go to the pro day and watch all the throwing. Like, yeah, that's great, all that stuff. But what he would actually do is he would seek out other people. So he'd go, he'd seek out, you know, talk to the training staff, talk to the tutors, or like academic support, I think is what it's called, to, people basically supporting the academic side. Hey, how's this kid as a student? Go and talk to the film people. Hey, is he in here watching film? What's his film schedule like? How many hours, because I can track it on the iPad, how many hours is he putting in on the film per day or a week or whatever? How much extra is he doing? Talk to people about his personality. You know, ask the security guy, or ask the desk person, basically, you know, hey, what's this kid like? You know, well, he's a jerk. Every time he walks in here, he's, you know, a really nice guy. You know, he's in here, he's very friendly, personable, all those things. Like, all that stuff is information that they're getting, which I guess shouldn't have been surprising, but it's one of those things when I've seen this up close when we were at the Senior Bowl, it was 4 years ago now. Some of the questions that were asked of the players were kind of like Jamal Williams. Like I knew, or Evan Engram and Jamal Williams, they both had some off the field stuff that got them a little bit jammed up, in the process. I think Evan Engram's was It was something to do with like a girlfriend and, you know, whatever. And it wasn't anything super serious, but they were asking him about it. And like, it had been publicly reported and he'd given statements about it. Like, it wasn't anything like bad, but they asked him, you know, off the field stuff. And it was stuff that like a simple Google search would have gotten. So I was always kind of underimpressed by the background research. But one of the things that from that experience, but one of the things that popped to me in the Daniel Jeremiah thing was, there's different tiers of this going on. And so those are the kind of the field scouts or whatever. They're just trying to check the boxes on their assignments. Some of the guys that are going to these pro days and stuff, you're collecting more specific stuff. You're interviewing specific, you know, you're getting more and more information about, you know, trying to get to know this player a little bit more. So that is something this year that has not really been done, because this would be stuff that some scouts would be doing in the fall, right? Leading up to pro days, right? They're going to see practice. They're snooping around, you know, they're going to ask the bartender at the local pub, you know, hey, how long is this guy in there? All of these things, right? You hear these stories. That's not been stuff that's been going on this year, because you're not getting the same access because it is COVID restrictions. So what Daniel Jeremiah said is you're going to get movement on players because there's going to be information and a lot of information coming out that you didn't have access to before. And a lot of it's going to surround pro days and some of the additional information that you're going to get from the school side of this stuff. Not in the official PR spin school information, but in the on the ground reporting, for lack of a better word, you know, the man on the street type information that you can get just from striking up conversations with people. That's going to be stuff. And that actually influences some of the movement on player values and that sort of thing. So that was very illuminating to hear and to listen to in terms of a process thing. So if you start to hear these things at this time of year, and this isn't, you know, this is just in the context of talking about Mac Jones, this isn't about Mac Jones specifically, but if you start hearing stuff, right, that can be some of where it's coming from. So just keep that in mind as well when you're listening to the process. So the Mac Jones thing, the reason why I mentioned Daniel Jeremiah before we got off on a tangent is he said very specifically that he asked around and almost unanimously from people that he trusts, the people that are in the know, the people that he's used their information before that would be that are very savvy. He says that this move up is for Daniel Jones. He says, I wouldn't lock that in yet. Mac Jones. Again, it's Freudian slip. This is for Mac Jones. Yeah, that San Francisco moved up to 3 to get Mac Jones. And I've heard Daniel Jeremiah speak about this a couple of different times. He was on the Athletic podcast on his own. And the analogy that they used, specifically him and Bucky Brooks, basically that Kyle Shanahan wants a joystick and that he basically wants someone that he can basically play quarterback from the sideline and have that quarterback be able to execute exactly what he sees and what he wants and what he visions. So that is something that when you think about that is pretty interesting in terms of thinking about these quarterbacks. When you look at some of the quarterbacks that the Shanahans have had success with, they still speak very, very highly of Kirk Cousins. Kyle Shanahan had some of his best success of his career with Matt Ryan. All of these guys more processors from the pocket than true dual threat mobile guys. Weren't fans of Robert Griffin III. That was basically a management decision. You know, they wanted either, I think, Tannehill or Kirk Cousins were their two options that they actually wanted. You know, so when you look at that, it's an interesting prototype that we're talking about. So I think that's interesting from a Mac Jones perspective. So isn't going to offer a ton from the athleticism game, but can process. You know, I heard him talking today that he's basically got a photographic memory. Again, that strikes back to some of the stuff McVay does in terms of his photographic memory. And, you know, that is a branch of the same tree that Kyle Shanahan is from, right? They came from the same space. So that is a really interesting sort of connect all the dots. He was as adamant as I've heard him be in the years of listening to him that he thinks that this pick is going to be Mac Jones. So I do put some credit to that. You know, and I actually saw some odds posted today that they were kicking around on Twitter that didn't include Mac Jones as being the third overall pick. So not sure about that in terms of some betting odds. So we'll see. But that I thought that was really interesting was that connection to the dots. I will say, and I'm sort of working on a theory, and if you were to sort of create some different theories of the quarterback position, that, you know, you could say the Baker Mayfield theory, I guess, if you will, the Sam Darnold theory of the position, the Josh Rosen theory of the position, is passers, pocket passers first. And maybe they offer a little bit in the running game, but they're going to play from the pocket, right? They're going to beat you as passers. Then you have the guys that can do both, right? That might be the Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, but they're more passers who can run. And then you have the runners who you hope to develop into passers. Those are your Josh Allen, your Lamar Jacksons. Again, this is broadly simplifying, and there's obviously different levels of this. But when you think about each one of them, they rise and fall as passers, right? Typically, if you know Josh Allen was basically a fringe quarterback one to the first 2 years of his career on the basis of his running abilities, but took it to the whole different level because of his massive leap as a passer. And outside of that, outside of the big leap as a passer, you sort of become, I think there's questions about you no matter what theory of that position that you play. But Lamar Jackson's really the lone example right now of guys who are, who are considered quote franchise guys who aren't, really being good passers. I think all of the guys that we, at least for me, that I have confidence in. You know, you think of Dak Prescott, you think of Watson, right? These are all guys that can run, but have ascended to a different level by being passers. Mahomes can run. Prescott can run. Watson can run in a number of different ways. All of them can run, but only truly ascend when they pass, right? So does the question become for Mac Jones, is he more likely to pass that in a Kyle Shanahan system, is he more likely to pass that test as the threshold thrower than if he was in a different system? Probably, right? That system is good for quarterbacks. And you go back to guys like Jake Plummer too. They have never been these great dual threat, you know, throwers. Really, like the guys that have had success have been sort of a type. Processing and all that stuff. And so I think of that, and I think of, all right, is Mac Jones sort of put him on a threshold of success? Does maybe his success look a little bit more like Breeze, like a lesser version of Breeze, where it's from the pocket, it's throwing, and I'm not going to say that he has Breeze upside because that's crazy, but you sort of look at that and you say, all right, that's kind of how you're going to have to win. Is success for him more likely because he's would be in San Francisco? Yes. Is it the same level of success that maybe someone like Justin Fields has because he has two-way ability? No, but is it a higher floor? Is it a higher median outcome? That's, I think, something we need to think about, right? And again, are we shooting for a lead upside? Yes. I think it's important to sort of capture value when we can get it too. And if it's in the form of, hey, I don't think Mac Jones can post top six outcomes because he can't run, and therefore the market puts him as quarterback five, but he's quarterback three off the board. I think that's something we need to think about, right? And think about how we sort of target that, because that is probably a higher, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a median outcome or something like that, you are probably getting value in some form of how you identify the position, how you identify the production of the position if you're getting him at quarterback 5 and he goes to a really good situation like this. So I think we need to think about that. Again, if he's going to be a top 10 guy, which is kind of sounding like it's what it's going to be right now, I think we need to maybe reevaluate him and how we think about it. Again, I'm not totally sure about how I feel about this, but it's just something that's been brewing in my mind the past 36 hours, 48 hours or so from the time of this recording. So I got to think more about this and maybe look at some more archetypes. But that's one thing with him. I think him being up at number 3 is something that we shouldn't necessarily rule out. And the Shanahans have done some strange things in the past. And they've been pretty successful. So I wouldn't necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily rule out anything like this. And the other thing too that I noticed, or that I've heard in sort of listening to these podcasts, David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, was at the Senior Bowl. I'm not gonna say that's uncommon, but it's not. There's only one reason that he was there, and there was owners down there when we were down there in 2017, but. Like he is looking for something very specific and has been very open about looking for a starting quarterback. So the fact that he invested that time to go down there probably puts Mac Jones higher in the NFL sphere, because everyone's looking around saying there's one reason that he's here, puts him higher in the NFL sphere than maybe he was going in the media. And that's something else that sort of jumped out, which might have been the reason for this move. So that's just some things there that just came to mind and sort of that I've been hearing and listening to. I figured it was important to pass it along. And we got to think more about how we value Mac Jones if this is going to happen. And he's going to be someone that I think is going to be a high leverage decision that we're going to be having to make. So looking at that. So he's at 15.9 right now. That's not reflective of where he's going to be going here in the next month. In terms of these mock drafts, that's going to go up. That might drop in half, right? So it might be somewhere 7-8, something like that. The other guys in this are pretty clear. Trevor Lawrence is at 1. He's a consensus 1 at this point. His expected draft position is 1. It is not 1.1. It is 1. So the market's pretty locked into that one. Zach Wilson is at 2.1. So the market's pretty close to locked in on that one as well. That is... that he's the second-ranked person in terms of expected draft position off the board. And Justin Fields and Trey Lance are 3 and 4. So in terms of essentially the way Benjamin Robinson does this is he essentially says, hey, here's sort of the expected draft positions in terms of what the mocks are saying, and then he sort of ranks them, right? So Justin Fields is at 5.3 as his expected draft position, but that ranks 3rd highest amongst all the players in the NFL. So give you an idea, there's a couple of different things going on. You can sort of see a gap open up, for example, like I'm just using an example here. Jamie Newman, 97.7 is his expected draft position, but that ranks 132nd, right? So they get a little bit different there as we sort of get further down the board. So, and as you sort of get further down the board, you should look at more expected draft rank instead of expected draft position. That'll be more helpful. So Justin Fields is at 3, Trey Lance is at 4, right? They're both 5.3 and 5.4 respectively, and then you drop to Mac Jones at 15.9. Again, I expect that to be, as we get closer, I expect Mac Jones to be closer to that tier, if not in that tier. And you might even see him settle somewhere around the Carolina pick, sort of that 5 guys sort of be in that line. I expect there probably be, you know, the thing with Mac Jones going up there so high is if that happens, it's going to open up the opportunity for a team like Denver, a team like Carolina, to get into this business that we didn't think that they were necessarily in terms of Fields or Lance. It's going to put Atlanta in a really interesting position. It's going to put Detroit in an interesting position. So again, I'm not necessarily backing away from Jared Goff at this point, but I think it could be an interesting, that's a situation we need to look at and examine a little bit closer. And the thing with Jared Goff is they've sort of locked into him being the next couple of years, but they could have a look at quarterback 5 at that spot, maybe it being Lance or Fields, and we wouldn't have thought that 144 hours ago, right? So that's something that I would think about as well. I don't think that they're going to take a quarterback, but that'll be something we'll watch for. And then after that, it's a pretty big tier. I've talked about some of these guys. Kyle Trask is one that I am pretty I'm pretty ambivalent about. I'm not really in on any of these guys. Davis Mills is a guy that I expect is going to rise in draft position here over the next couple of weeks. At least in the dynasty sphere, Jamie Newman, again, he's more of a day three guy. Kellen Mond, day three guy. Shane Bichelle, day three guy. KJ Costello out at Mississippi State's probably like day three undrafted guy. So that's really the position. Again, I don't really have any strong bets in that range. You know, we'll see what draft pedigree does. Maybe someone slides into day two and we can rethink that. But again, outside of it being a top 10 guy, top 12 guy, after that, it's a pretty big teardrop unless they're a super dynamic runner and we don't really have that in the class. I guess Kellen Mond sort of, but not really. So that would sort of be the thought. All right, let's turn over here to the tight end position. We'll do a little bit of a combo here. You know, I was actually looking at some of the, I'm going to do a little bit more specifics on the tight ends here, but I'll just run these down. I'll have some more specific content coming out because there's some interesting athleticism stuff that I found. So I was going back through and tracking some pro day stuff. Kyle Pitts, 6.9. I think that Miami's got him pegged in as their pick. That's my hunch. That's my hunch on them. I think that's why they made that move. And so that might be a threat to Gesicki. Gesicki kind of plays more of a slot wide receiver role anyway, so I'm not necessarily sure it's going to hurt Gesicki all that much. It might make him cheaper, which actually be kind of nice. But they need weapons, and they get another one, and the Pitts can play all over the place. I'm not even sure he's going to be that huge of a threat to Gesicki, honestly. I think they can operate two different ways. That'd be something I'd be on the lookout for. Tommy Tremble and Pat Freiermuth, both basically in the early part of the second round. So that's, I think, an interesting one in terms of, you know, how does that ordering go? Is one of those guys going to be a value? We'll watch for that a little bit here as we go, we get going along a little bit further. You know, Freiermuth has been one that we've had some, I've actually had people comment in the Analytics Dynasty group me chat about him rising in value. So we'll be, you know, we'll be watching for him in terms of seeing him go a little bit higher. He basically was like a fringe first round guy up until like the turn of the calendar year, kind of dropped back down to the middle of the second, and it's taken a pretty sharp turn back up towards the first round here over the past like couple of weeks or so. It almost looks like a little bit of a U situation going on with him. So he is one that appears to be rising in draft value. So we'll be watching for that. Maybe he sneaks in to be a late day one guy. We could be pretty interested in that because I think it'd be a huge gap between him and Kyle Pitts as we look forward. Tommy Tremble has basically been shooting straight up, so we'll see how that goes as well. He's out of Notre Dame. And then some of the other guys here, Brevin Jordan, Trey McKitty, both out of Miami and Georgia respectively, both fringe round two, round three guys. That's sort of the area we're thinking of them. Hunter Long out of Boston College. He is a later in round three guy. Nick Ebanks out of Michigan is right around the cusp of day three. Day two, day three turn there for both of those guys. Tony Poljan, I think is out of Virginia. He's looking day three. Kenny Yebo out of Ole Miss, day three guy as well. Noah Gray and Matt Bushman out of BYU, and Noah Gray out of Duke, both there firmly in day three. So those are the 11 guys. There's 11 guys right now for both quarterback and tight end making it. Again, I think the decision points are going to have to be, we'll have to dive into Tommy Tremble a little bit as well as Freiermuth and sort of see how those guys get, got to look at their profiles more. We'll have some more specific stuff going on these tight ends here coming up, as well as the next tier that Brevin Jordan, Trey McKitty, I think will also be pretty interesting there and sort of how those guys do. So if we get, it'd be nice if we got like five guys in the first two rounds. That'd be really nice. It's probably an upset. Maybe we set the line at 3.5, but if we could get four, that'd be really nice. That'd be pretty helpful. So be looking forward to that. So, all right, well, that'll do it. It's a little bit of a kind of a smorgasbord to start, but I figured I would some knowledge dump, I guess, of some of the stuff I've been listening to and finding. So, all right, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.